Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. It is Friday. We are talking recruiting, and that means that we are talking to Lee Corgan, founder, principal, president of Corgan Sports Enterprises. Which one do you want to go with?
Head janitor.
There you go. And we've got everything under the sun to talk about because your recruiting empire is vast and you can see far into the distance.
I don't know about that, but trying to keep up.
We're going to start with the Under Armour All-America game, of which your organization is the event operator. And, you know, I've said it many times acutely over the last couple of years, it sits alone in the recruiting landscape for the way it is a destination for both participants and for college coaches. The tryout process, 12 regions, 2 divisions, boys and girls, lead into the Pinnacle weekend in the summertime, early July at Towson University this year. A new addition, the Senior All-America game will be played at Homewood Field. Lee, what are the nuts and bolts? Excuse me, let me ask it this way. What's the secret sauce to All-America?
The secret sauce to Under Armour All-American is, you know what? It's the triangle. It is all those kids participating in those tryouts, the process, then having the opportunity to make those regional teams as underclassmen, and then ultimately getting chosen as Under Armour All-Americans. And when I first put together the event, really what I was trying to emulate was the McDonald's All-American basketball game. And when I went in to visit with Steve Batista of Under Armour and those guys and trying to put the whole thing together, the way the whole underclassmen thing really came about is we're in there and we're talking, well, if we just do this senior game, we're probably just going to have moms, dads, and, you know, et cetera, in the stands. And we really want the thing to be popular and we want to build the brand. And how are we going to do that? Well, let's create this Under Armour underclass challenge. And so it really started out with underclassmen from Baltimore versus underclassmen from D.C. because we thought there was enough competitive juice there to carry the day.
Well, and the event took place in Baltimore, so obviously it made sense that way.
Exactly. And then it just evolved from that. And I remember the big bell went off in this office when Dave Patrimonio picked up the phone and called us and said, hey, when are you doing that tryout for the underclass D.C. team next year? And a big bell went off, and that is when we continued to grow that underclass tournament and those tryout, that whole platform. And now, ultimately, we have 12 different regions this year. We're adding the Connecticut region. We're calling it CONNIE, Connecticut, New York, and we really think that that is going to be a very robust region, and we think that's going to do great. And obviously, now we have 2 divisions of 6, so that'll really help.
And so when you talk about the challenges that you guys have had to overcome in growing and scaling this event, you know, what stands out?
The never-ending noise that's in somehow the selection process, of whether it be the seniors, which you guys do an awesome job with, and the selections that you have made over the years have certainly panned out as those kids, those Under Armour All-Americans, have gone on to be great, great lacrosse players. And, you know, you don't have to look any further than Matt Rambo. Matt Rambo was the MVP of the Under Armour underclassmen tournament as a Philadelphia player for Philadelphia. He was the MVP of the Under Armour All-American senior game, scored 8 goals, by the way. And then, of course, we know he was the MVP of the national championship game, player of the year, and, of course, won the Tuareg Award. So, you know, you really don't have to go much further there. But one of the things that is a never-ending topic around here, and it's a never-ending quest of us to really make the event not only be fair, but appear to be fair in the selection of the seniors as well as those underclassmen. And that is why we demand that the underclassmen coaches staff for all those regions, we have diversity. We want public school coaches. We want private school coaches. We want club coaches because we want a variety of opinions in that selection room. And we, you know, we're pretty stringent about that, and we want to hear from everybody. And the whole object for me is to make sure that everybody walks out of that room feeling like their guy had a really good chance, and maybe he just didn't make it. And the stories of the guys that didn't make it, you know, there's a ton of them, of course, you know, because it's really tough to slice your guys, you know, that team down to 22 when you have 200 kids trying out for that age group and that specific region.
And so you're saying that prompts me to say one of the conversations that I've had a few times over the last year is about what are we trying to accomplish when we pick the Under Armour Senior All-Americans? And, you know, first of all, we say it's the 44 best players in the country. It's not. It's the 12 best attackmen, the 20 best middies, the 12 best defensemen, and the 4 best goalies, and sometimes 2, sometimes 4 best faceoff specialists. That's a different task. Mm-hmm. When you say best, obviously that can mean a number of things. One of the obstacles we've had to overcome is this a reward for what you've accomplished at the high school level, or is it a projection of what you're going to do as a college player? And I think that the goal would be both. But if it's one or the other proposition, we're trying to pick the college stars. We're trying to pick the guys and women who are going on to the most illustrious college careers. And so, you know, in doing that, it presents certain challenges. Certainly, yeah. You know, what type of program you're going to, what type of opportunity is going to be available to you is at least a consideration, you know, in conjunction with the fact of what did you accomplish at the high school level. But, you know, there have been guys who, you know, we felt like we're no-brainer future college stars who didn't play much in their senior year of high school because of injury, and those guys are worthy of selection because of the goal of what we're trying to accomplish with this event. And I think that, you know, that is a function of stuff like this podcast, getting that story, getting that narrative out, making sure that people understand what we're trying to do.
Sure, and any high D1 coach will tell you, you never know how these 18, 19-year-old kids are going to react to going to the college level, and there's a huge adjustment period, and you know, and we talk about it here, and we see it specifically in Baltimore. Those kids that are great MIA players, a lot of times they literally top out, and that is the height of their college career, is being a great MIA player. And then maybe they don't have the enthusiasm because they work so hard to get to that pinnacle, to get to the next pinnacle, to be a great, great college player. So you're making an excellent point there, and you know, I think that you know, time has shown, and the inside lacrosse selections have shown to be overall very accurate. And there's always going to be misses, but you know, nothing's ever perfect.
Exactly. And what prompted, or what do you think of the move from Towson to Homewood Field?
Well, we're excited about it because Homewood, of course, is the home of lacrosse, and there's, you know, it's a historic lacrosse venue, and anybody that knows anything about the sport of lacrosse knows about the legendary Homewood Field. So we're certainly excited about that. Important to note that is that underclass tournament will continue to be at Towson, which provides an awesome venue for us. We're able to get all the girls' fields as well as all the boys' fields in one close proximity. We're still going to have use of that stadium complex, which is great, and we'll be doing those uncommitted games in the stadium as well.
And so, as I mentioned at the top, there's a lot more to go over besides just the Under Armour All-America event. We're going to transition to the IWLCA. Corbin mm-hmm. Sports has a partnership with the IWLCA and operating their events. We're coming off of the President's Cup last month in Florida. It's one of the biggest, most robust events on the recruiting landscape. Just how unique is it?
Well, you asked me for the secret sauce earlier, and the secret sauce of the IWLCA event is, number one, is the cohesiveness of that organization. Gothard Lane is the executive director of that organization, does an awesome job. And the women, and guys for that matter, that are on the board of directors, they really see it. And they spend a lot of time trying to be cohesive and trying to keep that group together. The secret sauce of the success of that event is clearly that the convention is happening in Orlando on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then we come on in on the heels of that on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and put together a tournament which is spectacular.
And how many fields did you guys use this year?
We used 35 fields this year. 3 different venues, 35 fields, had 380 teams, sold out literally in minutes online. And and clearly the secret sauce is that all those coaches that go to the convention, which is close to 1,000, almost all of them show up at the recruiting tournament that weekend. And so there's no other club lacrosse tournament that can possibly say that we had 800 college coaches. We can say that, which is absurd. I know.
And so what does that mean for the organization? I mean, obviously, this year, the IWLCA led an effort that I describe as historic. You know, their ability to work with the NCAA to create new recruiting rules was an achievement that coaches associations like that can't really lay claim to very often. How do you correlate the ability of the organization to do something like execute a recruiting tournament on that scale,
yeah,
and then translate it into something that, you know, doesn't necessarily have anything to do with it? It doesn't, it's not a one-to-one skill set ratio, but one leads to the other.
Sure. And you know what? I got to point to one guy, and that's Gothard Lane. He's the executive director. He has a long history with in college athletics. He was the head athletic director of St. Bonaventure, was associate athletic director for years at the University of Maryland, was also an assistant commissioner at the ECAC. So he knows where all those bodies are buried. He also happened to run the NCAA Men's Final Four for years when it was at the University of Maryland, and it really grew. If you remember during that period, during the 90s, Gothard Lane was the guy that was in charge. So I think Gothard has a lot of stick with the NCAA, and the, you know, the power of the IWLCA, because, you know, part of it is due to our success with them in the tournaments. Of course, we run four other very successful tournaments with them as well. They have a war chest, if you will, and they use it, and they've been able to become influential with the NCAA, and I think it's for the betterment of the game. And you know, the IWLCA has also donated a lot of money to U.S. lacrosse, you know, to fund their headquarters building. It's something that we can all be very proud of.
I mentioned the recruiting legislation. You're looking at this from multiple angles. What do you think of the rule that prohibits contact between college coaches and prospective student athletes prior to September 1 of their junior year?
I think it's good. I think most people will tell you the brakes really needed to be put on in that regard. And I think, you know, maybe it gives certainly the kids, the moms and the dads, and the opportunity to get their feet under them a little bit and do a better job evaluating. Also, I think it helps the college coaches themselves, because some of these high-profile D1 coaches were running themselves ragged trying to recruit ninth graders, which was pretty interesting and silly. Also, back to missing on guys, we talked about it with the Under Armour All-American a little bit. I mean, can you imagine you're trying to recruit ninth graders and how to project them as a person and an athlete moving forward 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road gets tougher and tougher and tougher, obviously. So I think the coaches are happy about it, and I think it's working out. But I will say that they still keep one eye open. Let's just say that.
What type of impact do you think it's had on the business of operating a club team and running an event?
Well, I can tell you, I can speak to both those, because obviously, as you know, we run events, and also I continue to coach a club lacrosse team. And so what we've seen at our tournaments and, you know, the Under Armour All-American tryouts and the IWLCA tournaments, not as many coaches are showing up on those younger fields. And it's, you know, significant. And so I think, you know, the hysteria around it has been tamped down a little bit, the early recruiting. So I think that's good for everybody, and I think it's also good for, obviously, those kids that are older kids, and now they're getting the looks that they deserve. For years, I thought my older kids and my club lacrosse program always got bypassed because their spot was already, you know, taken by some kid that was much younger, or the coach's attention was over on the younger field. So I think it's best for all.
I remember talking to you, having that conversation with you last year, and I remember you were citing guys like Joe Sider and Jack Adams you know, guys that
under-recruited.
Yeah, if they had been on a calendar that maybe is what we're moving back toward, whether or not they would have ended up at Towson is in question because of the number of suitors they would have had.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and the list goes on and on, of course, but obviously worked out well for Jack and Joe and Coach Natalie. So very proud of those boys, and they were able to have great college careers, and, you know, but I think, you know, as we said, it's moving in the right direction. But like I said, I also think all those coaches will have one eye peeled on the younger field still.
Mentioned your relationship with the IWLCA. You also have a similar relationship with the IMLCA, having just operated the inaugural IMLCA National Cup, the Adidas IMLCA National Cup, getting ready for year two. How do you characterize the event in year one, and what are you looking forward to for Lebanon Valley this summer?
Year number one was great. It all worked out very, very well, getting our feet wet with the IMLCA and them getting a real taste of what we do and how we do it in terms of putting on a really good quality event. I think that is important, number one. Number two, we had a great partner. Adidas did a great job supporting the event, particularly as it relates to the uncommitted games, as well as the All-Star game that they put on, that we put on for them. And they provided a ton of gear for the kids, and it really looked sharp, and it was sharp. We had great support from the IMLCA coaches. We had about 160 IMLCA coaches on site that weekend. So we're pretty pleased. And this year it's getting even better. And the reason I say that, we're going back to Lebanon Valley, is because we're already sold out, and the teams, the quality teams, is getting better and better and better. And we're getting a lot of inquiries around here by very legitimate club programs that want to be a part of it. So, the future is very bright on that one for sure. And we're also talking to them about additional events in the future, possibly.
And then transitioning toward, what you mentioned earlier, you are still a coach, mm-hmm. the Rough Riders.
Yes, sir.
And your program is expanding to Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah.
What does that entail?
As you know, we're here in Maryland. And then, of course, we're in Philadelphia. We got the Philadelphia Rough Riders, and now we just opened up the Virginia Rough Riders, and that's going to be based out of Richmond. A couple of different reasons for that. Number one, some folks in the Richmond market came to us, and they said that there was a void, and that they needed some structure, a really good structure of a club program to put together down there. And next, the thing that made a lot of sense for us is we're down there five times a year with we have two Rumble and Richmond boys events. Of course, we have two very big IWLCA girls events, and we also do a field hockey event down in there at the River City Sportsplex, which is fantastic turf facility down there. And so we know a lot of the players down there, and so obviously opportunity for us to expand the Rough Riders and just take that brand down to Virginia and give it some structure and give it some help. And we're coming right online with teams from age group 22, 23s, 24s, 25s, and 26s. So we're going to have five different teams, five different age groups right off the bat, so it'll be robust.
So now that we have a full understanding of what it is that you're involved with and a little bit of your opinion on what the current state of recruiting is in the wake of April's historic rule implementation and everything that has followed over the course of the summer season and the fall, what's next? What do you see coming down the pipeline as it relates to whether it's the business and politics of the recruiting landscape or whether it's with respect to the way in which players and families and clubs are reacting and what coaches are looking for, et cetera?
I think more of the same. I wish I had a crystal ball that would tell me exactly where it was headed, but we see a lot of different things happening. We see more and more of the showcase type events, the individual showcase type events, and I think that's important. And the other thing that's important and something that has become more prominent is the individual school play days. And more, I can just speak to it from as the coach of the Rough Riders, and that is that my kids are constantly being invited to come to different colleges for their junior play day, their sophomore play day, whatever it may be, and give those coaches an opportunity to really get to know the kids. You know, the recruiting landscape is it's a tough space. It really is. It's a tough space for everybody, whether it's the kid, the college coach, the club coach, the high school coach. And I feel like all those different entities are involved, along with mom and dad trying to make a good choice for the kids. But I think with the recent legislation, I think it's going to be better. And I think it's going to lead to less transferring. Okay, and in the long run, I know there's some poaching and things out there, but I think the transferring will be minimized.
Excellent. Well, Lee, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. Look forward to moving into the springtime and beginning the Under Armour All-America selection, as well as everything else under the sun that you guys have going on. So we appreciate your time.
Amen. Thank you very much for your partnership. We appreciate it.
If you're listening to this, you're probably either a teenager or you're around a teenager, because this is a recruiting podcast and teenagers are who get recruited to play college lacrosse. Teenagers are also always hungry, and I've got a solution for you. It's called RX Bar. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar. What does that mean? It means the bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. They want to be transparent and upfront with their customers, which is why RX Bar labels the core ingredients right on the front of the package. Those core ingredients are egg whites for protein, dates to bind, and nuts for texture. And they put everything that makes up the taste and texture, which is contributed to not just by the nuts, but also by some of the other ingredients that are included, on the back. Beyond being a go-to snack that checks off all the nutritional boxes, RX Bar tastes delicious. Imagine that. A bar made from real, whole ingredients actually tastes better than anything out there. And I can vouch for this. We got a box ourselves. I am very hungry right now. I'm going to satisfy my hunger with an RX Bar because it tastes more like a granola bar than a protein bar. And that's pretty good for me because I'm not working out at the level that I feel like I can really justify a traditional protein bar and all the chalkiness. So RX Bar is the bar for me. Fortunately, I'm not going to get sick of them because they come in 11 varieties. Whether you like savory or sweet, chocolate or fruit, there's an RX Bar for you. What there isn't, however, is gluten, soy, dairy, added sugar, artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Like I said, just the egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture. RX Bars are good for pretty much everything that you would utilize some sort of bar for when you're hungry. And for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/lacrosse and enter the promo code lacrosse at checkout. Once again, that's 25% off your first order by visiting rxbar.com/lacrosse and enter promo code lacrosse at checkout. The Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast continues with Dan Ahern. Dan, it has been almost a month since we've talked about recruiting news, and there's been a good amount of activity. Make sure that you check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting to find our updated commitments list. Over the course of last month, we've had about 90 commitments come through, and a few of the storylines that have emerged, we're kind of ordering this more or less by program. One of the switched commitments that caught my eye is McDonough defenseman BJ Ferrer. Longtime Loyola commit has decided to go to Penn. He wants to play football and lacrosse, and the Greyhounds do not offer that football option. So it was a better fit for him. It's a bummer because from a play style perspective, and this is not a comment about Penn, it's just a comment about Loyola, I thought he was going to fit in really nicely. He's a frenetic on-ball defender who, while the knock has always been that he's not very tall, is strong and really good at leveraging the guys that he's covering. He's versatile. He can play up top or down low, which is something that we've seen. And he's good with the ball. He's good carrying the ball upfield. Basically, what I'm saying is I saw a lot of a guy that could become Scott Ratliff in BJ Ferrer, from the first game I saw him play, which I think was at McDonough his freshman year.
Yeah, he's just a fantastic athlete first and foremost, but then such a dynamic player with the ball. And we made this comment, I think, a few podcasts back, where he's one of the first players where we wanted to list his position as an ATH because he's such a tremendous athlete, and he's able to do so many things. Like, watching him play for McDonough, I think they would literally have him run up to the field. He would throw his long pole to the someone on the sidelines, and they'd throw him a short pole so he could go and play offense. He's just such a dynamic player. Got to respect the decision, to go and play both sports at Penn. So it's definitely a big loss for Loyola, but I do think that Penn really gains a dynamic player. And Penn, I think they're one of those teams in the Ivy League tries to match the pace of teams like Brown, Harvard, and Cornell to some extent. So I think this is definitely a big pickup system-wise for them.
And it's not the only pickup that the Quakers have added over the last month. Gabe Fury, previously a Virginia commit out of Episcopal Academy, switched his commitment on November 15th. He is a 2019 midfielder with a lot of potential.
Yeah, a great shooter, first and foremost, in my opinion. Big guy, can really bring some velocity with that shot. It's just been a great summer, really, a very low-key good summer for Penn. You know, they've been able to pick up a lot of guys, whether it's being switched commitments or just guys who are a little bit under the radar and came on late in their academic and athletic career. So shout out to Penn this summer.
We mentioned Loyola. There are a couple of recent commitments that I found interesting. First being goalie Freeman Whitaker, a 2018, who was originally committed to Bellarmine. And my thought process there is just, you know, if you're a 2018 goalie, you know, goalie spots tend to go early because there's only one typically in most recruiting classes. You know, to be able to commit to Loyola, a program like Loyola, that late in the game is pretty surprising and got to feel good for that guy.
Yeah, you know, that kind of seems to be a trend that that hasn't really been discussed, but a lot of players are switching so much later, I think, because of this recruiting rule. I think that's maybe something for a whole other podcast, but it also seems to be, you know, goalies in particular as well. Another guy I think about is Alex Gainey, who just switched his commitment to Hopkins late in the game, so it's never too late, I guess. But congrats to Freeman.
And just yesterday, Wednesday, Loyola added a 2019 attackman, Joey Kamish, player with whom we're pretty familiar. He is a 2019 attackman, like I said, 5'10", out of Detroit Catholic Central in Michigan. I believe plays for Juice Cherries. He is described, he was rated a 75 on June 22nd, 2017, and he was described as a very sound, ready attackman, seems to be a very high IQ player. Most of his highlights come from situational awareness, being in the spot where a defense just slid from or finding a teammate in that situation. Joey Kamish is the younger brother of Brennan Kamish, who is a freshman at Detroit, player that we're really fond of. He was a top 100 player in the class of 2017. We think is going to make a big impact. A nice pickup for the Greyhounds.
Yeah, Brennan's game is kind of built around, I think, two things in particular. Some really good north-south speed and athleticism, and then just an absolute hammer of a right-handed shot. Joey, his game seems a little bit more different, a little bit more of a, you know, east-west kind of quickness and situational awareness and just a... It's more of an attacking player. You know, he plays attack as opposed to Brennan. I think this is a kid who's a little bit more dynamic with the ball, scoring and feeding.
Another program that caught my eye, High Point. They added a former Michigan commit, a long pole, and Emmett Jones, which was, you know, a little bit of a surprising switch. It's not to be lost that former Michigan defensive coordinator Ken Brochard is now a member of the Panthers staff. And prior to that, they had added Gerard Kane, who had been a Hartford commit. Kane made his impact at the IL Southeast Showcase earlier in the fall.
Yeah, High Point's definitely putting together some momentum. I look at their recruiting classes. It keeps getting better every year. I think this year with Asher Nolting was just such a recruiting, I guess if you can call it a coup, it was a coup going out and getting one of the best players from the West and probably the best high school player in the state of Colorado that year. But Emmett Jones was a guy who was on Michigan's radar for a very long time. Actually a little bit surprised to hear that he decommitted. And then going to High Point, that's just a huge pickup for them. He's just a great player, tremendous athlete.
And then moving on, probably the biggest news of the last month from a recruiting standpoint. Last weekend, Jake Taylor, a highly rated member of the class of 2019, a goal-scoring attackman from Denver, plays for the Denver Elite program, had been committed to the Pioneers, switched his commitment to Notre Dame. What do you got on this one?
A little bit surprising, simply because of the fact that he went through Denver Elite's program and committed to early on to Denver. You know, Denver Elite basically run by Trevor Tierney, so there's obviously a connection there with the Denver senior men's program. But, you know, I think this is one of those kids whose academic profile kind of got boosted late in the game, and I think it came down to Harvard or Notre Dame, and he went to the Fighting Irish, and I think this is just another one of those big recruiting flips for them. You know, just they continue to kind of, I don't want to say pioneer this, but they definitely kind of feel like they're leading the way when it comes to, you know, being guys who go out and just say, hey, like, you know, we don't care if you got a commitment verbaled anywhere, like, we're going to come after you. We want the guys we think are best for our team. So they can continue to do that. And Jake Taylor, I think, after watching him at Maverick Showtime this past summer, just a really creative scorer. And I think, you know, some of his stick skills are way ahead of a lot of his peers in this class. I think he's just a tremendous pickup for them.
How do you compare, you know, one of the things that I heard, and again, we've seen him many times at Iowa recruiting invitationals. I believe he put up 14 goals in five games in the summer of 2015, playing with that 2019 squad. You mentioned creative goal scorer, and that's something that has that I've heard from other sources as well. And it reminds me a little bit of what we saw out of Quentin Buchman. And I don't know how he can do this, but he does it. And it's also something we've heard out of Griffin Westland. I don't know how he can do this, but he does it. It seems to me like Notre Dame, from an offensive standpoint, is really valuing just that kind of undescribable tact for getting the ball in the net.
Yeah, you know, I think that recruiting trend kind of started with Matt Cavanaugh a few years ago, and then it really picked up with Ryder Garnsey, and now they're kind of saying full steam ahead with guys who can really, you know, are really creative with the stick and not only can score but also feed. And I think that's going to be going into detail with Ryder Garnsey, the type of season that I'm projecting him to have for Notre Dame. But yeah, like, I think of the possibility of all these different player combos coming together down the line, I think it's really exciting. You know, I think a big knock on Notre Dame, from us in particular, has been that, you know, their 6-on-6 offense is a little bit stale. And I think that by going out and getting these types of players, that kind of, it looks to me like they're trying to reverse that trend and that narrative.
And lastly, another guy just the day before announcing the Jake Taylor switch, the Fighting Irish picked up Fulton Bayman, an attackman from Lovett School in Georgia. He's a 2019 who's already announced his intention to PG and be a part of the 2020 class. He participated in the Isle Southeast Showcase. He was rated 80 at that event, and about him was written, "Incredible change of direction behind the net, can go back and forth, but makes it look smooth. He bursts off his foot when he shifts and gets separation instantly. He's always a threat to pass, but can go inside and take a hit too. On one play, he got the entire defense to shift entirely to one side, then easily came around the other untouched."
Yeah, this is a kid that I actually saw at Maverick Showtime, I believe, and I like marked him down and said, man, this kid's really special. So I remember when we were getting ready to go to our staff was getting ready to go to the Southeast Invitational, I was like, hey, you should keep an eye on this kid, Fulton Bayman. A couple of months later, he commits to Notre Dame. So now I feel
so vindicating when something like that
vindicating,
happens.
Yeah, so yeah, this kid, very quick, kind of reminds me of a lot of the players that they've been going after in recent years. Very quick, really good change of direction, really good with the stick coming out of that burst. So, you know, definitely kind of a wing or behind the X playmaker for them.
All right, Dan, it's December. It's holiday time. I talked yesterday with Matt about how I'm bad at buying gifts, and so I just resort to tickets. SeatGeek is the app on my phone that is by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. I hear that you have something to mention with respect to SeatGeek.
Yeah, so this weekend, me, Josh, Davey are going to California for the Legends Cup, which is an event put on by the Legends guys down in Del Mar. And we're actually doing that on Saturday and Sunday, and then we're going to go take a little trip up to Los Angeles on Monday night. Guess what's going on Monday night?
I mean, I feel like this is going to be a show that from a rapper that I've never heard of.
No. The Lakers are hosting the Warriors.
Ooh!
On Kobe Bryant retirement night. They're retiring his jersey. So I was like, ooh, I'm in Los Angeles for one day. I might have to make this work. You know the first site I went to?
SeatGeek. Was there a ticket cheaper than $5,000?
There actually was. You know, nosebleeds were, I'm not going to mention the price, they're expensive, but they're within reason. They're within range.
Have you bought tickets, or are you
still thinking about it? No, we are thinking about it still.
Wow. You got to do it.
We're thinking hard about it. So.
Well, if you do, you can check out SeatGeek, and all of our listeners can download the app. Get 25% off your first purchase. Enter promo code LACROSSE today. That's promo code LACROSSE for $20 off your first purchase. You could end up seeing Steph Curry balling out against Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, I mean, like, it would be one heck of an event. You know, you think about all the people that would be there. Steph Curry, KD, LaVar Ball. I'm more excited to see LaVar than Lonzo.
Unbelievable. Dan, you got to do it. But all right, Dan. Well, any other news or notes that you feel like need to be mentioned?
One kind of like, I guess, discovery from the IMLCA convention was coaches' reactions when we asked them about year one of the recruiting legislation. A common trend seemed to be that I think a lot of the coaches were caught off guard by how quickly the rule went into effect. And I think it caused a few of them to just be like, I guess the millennial word is shook. They just didn't know how to respond. They're like, what can we legally do right now? Can we call our 2019s to tell them what's up? And a lot of the coaches commented how, you know, usually when a rule like this goes into effect, whether it's on the field, off the field, recruiting kind of stuff, it usually gets implemented August 1st of the following year. So this you know, legislation kind of broke precedent and really just kind of froze the landscape of recruiting so quickly. And I'm not sure that a lot of coaches knew how to respond in the moment, but I think a few of them commented to me that looking back, it was the right decision, because I think a lot of them said that this would have caused a little too much hysteria, maybe a bit of a run on commits. So that was just an interesting discovery from this past weekend.
And just underscores what we've said many times, is this was a historic move. It's hard to overstate how impactful it was for a very significant part of the sport.
Yeah, and another thing I feel like you might have a little bit more knowledge on is there is this other recruiting proposal that's kind of making the rounds. It's more of a broader NCAA-centric kind of move. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So the context that's important is coming away from the span of 2012 to 2014, in which there was a really existential threat to the NCAA, particularly around the issue of paying players, football and basketball players specifically. You know, there was a threat to, you know, specifically, I think a lot of people wrote about the idea of Power Five conferences separating from the NCAA at large and creating their own entity that has a completely different rule structure. Coming away from that, the NCAA changed its governance structure. Basically, the way in which a body could put forward a rule that would be implemented, go through a process and be implemented. And that is exactly what the IWLCA and supported by other lacrosse entities, chiefly the IMLCA and US Lacrosse, pursued this recruiting legislation for more than a year that culminated in April. The reporting that I have seen surrounding this proposal is that the NCAA has watched the way in which lacrosse has benefited from the implementation of this rule and said, oh, well, we just do it for everybody other than football and basketball. And so now the proposal that has been constructed is very similar, except the date that starts illegal contact is September 1 of an athlete's sophomore year, which clearly would have a substantial impact on what we just experienced. Mm-hmm. And if it were to pass, the question is, would it impact lacrosse, or would lacrosse have a dispensation because the lacrosse-specific rule is more conservative by not starting until junior year, and as a result, that would continue to rule the land? And I think the answer is we don't know. I would say that because of the IWLCA attorney Samantha Ekstrand's proactive approach to advocating for the sanctity of lacrosse's proposal, the threat is real. I think if she felt like it wasn't a real threat, she wouldn't have taken those steps. And so it's worth watching. I don't know what the details are surrounding how quickly this can move. The next NCAA meeting or convention at which they hear rule proposals is in January. And if this is a part of that, you know, this is something that could move pretty quickly over the course of the next month.
Yeah, and that would just be, it'd just be crazy.
It would throw gasoline onto a fire that has been burning white hot since, I don't know what starting point you want to use, but certainly like April 14th or whatever it was that Friday that the rule passed.
And we already talked about how like it's created like an enclosed knife fight amongst coaches. I feel like that's like opening the door and just like more like people come into the knife fight.
Yeah, I think it creates confusion. It creates opportunity. You know, there's certainly something to be said for the fact that the smartest among us know how best to take advantage of confusion and opportunity. And so that's, you know, where you see some guys maybe saying, oh, this wouldn't be that bad of a thing. But on the other end of the spectrum, I'm not sure that this community really wants to begin the recruiting conversation in September of a prospective student athlete's sophomore year.
Yeah, and I think that's another takeaway from this past, you know, the convention weekend, was like, I think a lot of the coaches like it because it gives them a little bit more time to evaluate. And I think that with the way things were going before, they had to kind of rush into some decisions about a player. And I think it was especially echoed by, you know, I think the teams of what we would call powerhouse programs, that, you know, it's kind of nice that we can wait a little bit longer.
Not to mention the fact that if you start the conversation September with an athlete's sophomore year, the duration between when he has the opportunity to commit to when he signs and is obligated to spend a semester or a year at that program doubles. That doubling of duration increases the time by which recruiting committed players can occur. It could logically follow that it would increase the rate of poaching, which is something that I think, I don't know, most coaches want to avoid, increasing the rate of poaching, I think. I don't know.
Possibly. I think most coaches kind of just accept it as is. It's the way of the world now.
Right, but if they were evaluating a set of rules, one set said, this is not going to increase the rate, this one is, they'd probably more favor the former, the one that's going to just kind of maintain the status quo.
No, I agree with that.
So, well, Dan, we want to thank our listeners for checking out this edition of the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. We also want to thank our partners. Check out rxbar.com/lacrosse and use promo code lacrosse at checkout for 25% off your first order. And check out SeatGeek app. Use lacrosse as the promo code and get $20 off your first purchase. We will be back next week with another suite of Inside Lacrosse Podcasts.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.